I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Internet Marketing. Welcome back to the show where we give you the lowdown, the inside information, and the word from the experts to help you use the internet as part of your marketing machine. Internet Marketing is brought to you by AI Digital at www.ai-digital.com. And in a lively roundtable session today, I talked to Daniel Rells and Kevin Newman about web analytics, or should I say the expectations and demands of said web analytics, mobile search marketing, some useful Twitter tips and techniques, and what microphone we use for recording this podcast, all coming up in episode 46 of Internet Marketing. Hello everybody and welcome to another exciting episode of Internet Marketing and exciting news. We've actually got three presenters this morning. Yes, we are recording in the morning. We've got our usual Daniel Rowles, but we also have Kelvin Newman. And your title, Kelvin, is?
I'm Digital and Search Marketing Manager for Site Visibility. So I work with Daniel on a day-to-day basis, really. So yeah, working on search campaigns and that kind of thing.
Excellent. So you'll be talking a little bit later. But first, Daniel, we've got quite a few emails, haven't we?
We've had absolutely piles of emails coming in. Asked lots of people to follow me on Twitter. So we're going to be updating people through Twitter a lot more. And we think we've actually found a decent use for Twitter, which is updating people on a podcast. So we thought that was an interesting use. But a lot of the emails that have been coming in asking various questions. So I just wanted to go through some of those, give people some feedback, some great stuff coming in. So first question, which was a real obvious one, was from Mario from a website called proboke.com, which is actually a Spanish music website, was actually saying...
Somebody's drilling in our show. We can't have people drilling in our show. Carry on, talk louder, Dan.
Okay, yeah, Mariam from proboke.com, which is a Spanish music blog and website, and basically asking, why haven't we got a blog? Why doesn't the Internet Marketing Podcast have somewhere to live? And it's a very good question. We're probably one of the most popular Internet Marketing Podcasts in the world, and the website doesn't really live anywhere. Okay, the reason behind this, I mean, at the moment, it does sit on ai-digital.com/podcast, but it's not the ideal place for it to live because it's within our corporate website. What we're actually going to be doing is launching a whole new website that is all around internet marketing, the podcast, but also adding some blog content and adding maybe some video content and tutorials and things like that. So if you're interested in that, if you follow me on Twitter, so it's Daniel Rowles, so Daniel Rowles on Twitter, you will get the latest updates and you'll get the first updates on when that's actually going to happen. Okay, so Mario, very good point. Yeah, we've been horribly guilty of that. It's the cobbler's shoes theory where we really haven't done what we should have done and what we preach about all the time.
That'll be fantastic when that's ready, won't it, actually, Dan?
Yeah, exactly. And that really brings me on to the next question, which was from a guy called Paul at a website called Condon Kingdom. So I'm guessing that Condon...
What do they sell, Dan?
I'm guessing kingdoms of some description.
Yeah, I thought kingdoms as well.
So it's condom-kingdom.com.au, which is obviously an Australian website. And Paul was asking, okay, he's listened to the podcast for a long period of time now, and we're saying, what are the basic steps? What are the basic steps for people that are starting up an internet marketing business? And what I want to do is actually do this as a kind of separate thing, because there are lots of... bits of the podcast previously that would be useful. So we're actually going to write a blog entry as one of the first things we do in this new website to actually go, right, if you're starting up a business, these are the podcast episodes you should listen to. And one of the key things we'll point you at is obviously site build and SEO. We'll talk about analytics and we'll talk about usability because they're three of the most essential things when you get going. So Paul, if you look out for that, we'll have that up on the new website as soon as it comes out, which is probably be about a month time.
Fantastic. It's great to actually help people to consume the podcast, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing. I mean, if we can tie this in with a bit more content as well, it'll be a good thing for everybody, just to give them a better resource.
Fantastic.
Next email was from a guy, from James Walters, from a website called Tomorrow People. So that's tomorrow-people.com, which is a design agency. And he was asking a very good question about email systems. And there's some free systems out there, and there's some paid for systems. And we've obviously mentioned Pure, Pure 360 in the past as an email system, which is one we recommend and use all the time, which is at pure360.com. And James' question was really, what do you get, what you pay for, and is it worth paying for, and so on and so forth. Now, I don't want to be seen as biased on this because we do use Pure and we have a relationship with Pure. I've asked Pure to come back themselves with a response, which will clearly be biased towards Pure, but you know, that would let them give you their kind of pitch a little bit. And I've gone out to two other free email suppliers and asked them to give your part of the question, basically, and say, what do they think? So in the next episode of the podcast, we'll have responses from all three, and we can actually give you our kind of opinion on what the best system to use is. I think the bottom line, to a certain extent, is there are some fantastic free systems out there, but you get what you pay for sometimes as well. So we'll get a bit more into that. One of the most interesting emails we had was a guy from Mark at Ashworth Photography, which is ashworthphotography.co.uk. And Mark had emailed him previously asking about filtering his own surfing of his website from Google Analytics. And we gave a response that was quite PC-centric, that you could do certain things in Windows that would allow you to filter out your own responses, basically, by putting something into Windows that would block your IP address from actually setting cookies on your machine and so on and so forth. Essentially, because of that, it didn't work very well for Mark. So Mark went off and did a bit further research and came up with a really good system of how you can set some cookies in your own website using JavaScript. You can then go into the filtering in Google Analytics, and you can block it when those cookies have been set. So what this essentially allows you to do is very clearly block yourself out, because some of the other solutions were a bit flaky. So what we're going to do is, there's quite in-depth instructions for this. We'll post up a link in the show notes this time round to a page on our website that lists all this stuff as well. So if you want to filter yourself out of Google Analytics, you're not skewing your own results, have a look at the show notes, and you'll actually see a link through for that one as well.
Useful stuff.
Okay. The two more little quick things to go through. There was an email in from Carolina at sponsorapuppy.org.uk, which is a not-profit company, which is part of Guide Dogs for the Blind, which is guidedogs.org.uk, asking, how does the stuff we do apply to not-for-profit businesses? And we've actually found out we have quite a few businesses listening that are not-for-profits and charities. So again, along the email stuff that we're going to have in the next kind of the next podcast, we'll actually have a whole section on not-for-profits. And a lot of that stuff applies to other businesses as well, but we'll do a particular section on not-for-profits to cover off for those listeners.
So I look forward to that, because I've actually got a couple of non-profit clients who might be interested in hearing that.
Okay, good. And then the last point, just before, one small question for Andy, is Bob Morgan from ParamountCoffee.com has asked, how do you go about selecting an agency? Okay, now... we'll obviously have a point of view on this, and I don't want to make it too skewed towards our point of view. So I'm actually going to ask one of our main competitors, who we work with on quite a lot of bases as well, as how they think you should select an agency as well. And what we'll do is, as soon as the new website is launched up, we'll have two blog posts, two different points of view, how you actually select an agency. So we'll say what we think, and we'll get one of our competitors to do the same thing, so you've got a fair viewpoint on that.
Are we going to interview them, Dan?
Yeah, I think we can bring that in as well.
There was actually, moving on, it'll come into the SES a little bit later, but there was the IAB, the Internet Advertising Bureau, have done some quite interesting stuff recently about choosing an agency and questions to ask, which might feed in quite well to that, Daniel, I think. So,
yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, if you look at the IAB website, which I think is iab.uk.net, or iabuk.net, sorry, there's some really good content on all this kind of stuff as well, and the kind of best practice that people should be sticking to as well. But we'll try and give that a kind of fair viewpoint in the next podcast as well. The last question was from Alan Norton. Thank you very much for the feedback, Alan. It's really nice to get positive feedback. And literally asking, what microphone are we using, because the sound quality is so good. Now, with a drill in the background, I'm not sure the sound quality is so good, but I think Andy can tell you what the actual microphone is.
Well, the drilling was very transient. I don't believe it's there anymore. But we're using, hang on, I'm going to cough again. See how realistic that cough was? That's because we're using the Zoom H4, Z-O-O, M for mother, H for hotel, number 4. If you just Google that, most sort of decent sort of audio shops will sell it. It's basically a handheld digital recorder. Here comes the drill again. And as you can tell from the quality of that drill, it is very good at picking up sound. It's got a couple of very nice built-in condenser mics at the end. And there's a bit of a joke about the H4, because it does look very much like a taser. So if you're sort of, if you've got it in your bag and you stop by a policeman, make sure that you get your full explanation ready. But it's a fantastic piece of kit. It's pretty much broadcast quality. My only one criticism about it is that the shell, the body of it, is slightly creaky. It's plastic. And you may sometimes tell when somebody else starts to talk, it kind of goes, as I go,
hello,
like that. And I normally have to edit those out, but apart from that, it's a really, really nice piece of kit. It costs about £200 sterling, so translate that to your local currency. I'm pretty sure it's available worldwide, as far as I know. But yeah, the Zoom H4, so you basically just record, you can record in WAV or MP3, and then you USB it into your Mac or your computer and just drag and drop the file across and do whatever you want to do with it. But yeah, lovely piece of kit, Zoom H4. We should get them to sponsor us, because I'm always talking about the Zoom H4 on my podcasts.
I think you're absolutely right. I'll inquire into that one after this.
Yes.
What we wanted to do now is move on to get Kelvin to talk about search engine strategies. We had quite a few of the team along this week interviewing various people. Basically, Kelvin can let you know about it, but we were blogging on our Apple Pie and Custard blog as well. And you can find that on the Site Visibility website, so sitevisibility.co.uk. Go through there and you actually find that blog on there as well. And there's all kinds of good interviews that have got loads of traffic through in the last couple of weeks. So I'll hand you over to Kelvin.
Yeah, I really just wanted to talk about, you know, a few trends that came out of SES London. So that's, the, you know, the for people who aren't familiar with search engine strategies, it's, you know, one of the touring search marketing conferences that goes around the world. But in terms of the London-based one, it is, you know, the biggest search marketing conference in London. So you get quite a lot of Americans coming over talking about it, Europeans coming over, and it's very much the kind of European centre for sharing knowledge about search marketing. So there were some interesting trends that came out across the couple of days that we were up there, and there was just kind of five that I wanted to talk about and kind of, you know, bounce off you guys and see what your opinions were as well. The first one that a lot of people seem to be talking about, spinning out a lot of kind of the credit crunch, was analytics growing up, as it were. So people wanting greater reliability from their analytics package, greater transparency, and a kind of better understanding of, you know, where the traffic's come from. Because, you know, search might well have, you know, delivered the last click, but did they come via a banner ad before that? Or was it on a blog posting? Or did they read about, you know, did they read a profile of an employer on Twitter? And that kind of thing, which is definitely a trend that, you know, seemed to be coming through quite strongly, you know, in the sessions that I attended particularly.
One of the things we've noticed, well, I do lots of training talking to companies about analytics and search and how the two things connect. And for years, we've gone out to big corporates and they said, yeah, we've got analytics in place. And absolutely, yeah. We look at our analytics data every month and it goes into our managed reports. What you always found, though, is nothing was done with that analytics data. So you would literally get the data and people would say, oh, look, good, the traffic levels have gone up. And they might look at page impressions and things like that, but they weren't actually doing anything with the data and improving the website and actually working out where is the traffic coming from and dragging it back. So I think it's a really good point.
And I think for, like, you know, in the internet marketers listening here, it's a real opportunity to push, you know, your service forward. If you're trying to expand your product portfolio, it's kind of search, you know, people understand that and they look for it. But I really think that there's going to be a greater demand for analytics analysis that's going to come out over the next couple of years, particularly in the, you know, current financial climate, because people have the solutions. They can pay for, you know, Omniture or Hitbox or any of the, you know, the various, you know, slightly higher end tools out there. But what they don't get is kind of that analysis and understanding of what that really means. So that was definitely a trend that I saw across three or four different sessions that I attended. And another one that was kind of moving up is, you know, the future of search marketing at these conferences. I've attended quite a few now. You tend to get a lot of these, you know, future of search marketing or search 2.0 or whatever it is I tended to find. But there was, again, the kind of mobile and international sessions, which, again, always are really interesting. And the presenters reel off lots of stats about, you know, the growing search engines and how mobile search is developing. But it's suffered very much from that curse of, you know, I've seen this presentation at least three or four times before over the last three or four years, which is not to say that they're, you know, the data wasn't interesting, what the guys were talking about. But it's that kind of, I think there's a real onus on people now that, especially in mobile, you know, the iPhone's really taken off. They've stopped talking about what, how big it could be. And, you know, let's actually prove it and do some stuff with it, really, I think.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about this is we've heard the same story for 3 years in a row now that, you know, mobile marketing will be the big thing this year. I think what's changed is that you have to look at things from a slightly different perspective. More and more now, mobile devices are just showing the web in a normal way. I mean, essentially, if you look at the iPhone, it's using Safari to browse the web. The thing you haven't got is Flash. So that's the main difference from that point of view. There are other differences, but the key thing I'd say is that you need to look at standards compliance more and more. It's become more and more important, because the more standards compliant your website is, the more likely it is to work on these different devices as well. You're going to find that, you know, obviously more and more devices work towards being smart devices. It's the web, wherever it may be, but there's lots of variations and differences. And that's the hard thing about mobile, is that there are so many differences.
Do you know, actually, since I've had an iPhone, I've really noticed that, because I actually visited shortly after I got my iPhone. I thought, this is fantastic. I can be walking along in the street, surfing the net, obviously being very careful of where I'm walking. And I thought, I'll visit my own blog. Shock, horror, I couldn't play any of the audio on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and the thing is, I mean, in every office or every company, there's going to be at least one person who owns an iPhone. That's how prevalent it's become. Mm. And the one thing I could say, if anyone takes anything away from this podcast today to do with mobile marketing, it's go on your website on an iPhone and see if it's visible. Mm. The chances are, because it's using Safari, it will be visible, but can you actually navigate and get to the content? The number of websites where the text, you can't see what the, you know, what you've got that double click that you can do on the iPhone so you can zoom in. But if it's not apparent immediately where you've got to do that double click, you know, you've lost the people there already. So, and you can see in Google Analytics the number of people, if you look at the operating system that people come through on, you can see if people are coming to your site from iPhone.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
And I think you'd be surprised, you know, I've not checked our statistics recently, but, you know, we're looking at kind of like 2-3%. And, you know, I wouldn't have thought our website is a particularly, you know, a website that people would pick up on the move. If you've got a kind of product site or, you know, a hotel or anything kind of at all local, there's going to be quite a significant chunk of people looking at your website on mobile devices.
The other thing that skews the iPhone stats as well, which is interesting, is that people that have iPhones tend to be massive advocates of iPhones, because it's one of those products that you buy it and you love it. Mm-hmm. And you tend to do all sorts of different things. And what's happened with kind of iPhone applications, for example, is that an application will do particularly well because of the fact that somebody gets it, and they, whenever they're in the pub, they're at work, they're out with their friends, they show their friends. And all us iPhone users know we bore our friends to death with our new iPhone applications.
Free in the room here.
Yeah, I'm guilty too.
Yeah. So I think this is the thing that, you know, anything that goes out on iPhone tends to get promoted through word of mouth. And as we all know, word of mouth marketing works fantastically well. So iPhone application is really important, but if you can get your website working on the iPhone, make sure the audio and the video is in the right format for working on an iPhone, you'll tend to do quite well.
Cool. So the third trend I found in my attendance at SES was people going off Google Analytics. I mean, I attended a lot of analytics sessions because that's, you know, an area that I'm getting quite interested in. But there was a lot of people there, admittedly some of them working for, you know, people offering a paid alternative. But even amongst people who had no real vested interest, people starting to, you know, everyone's been very positive about Google Analytics because it's a great free tool. And, it, you know, it was better than any free tool that was out there already. But as people are getting more sophisticated, Google Analytics has given people a lot of confidence in analytics, you know, so they're looking deeper now. And people beginning to say, OK, well, is Google Analytics all as good as we think it's cracked up to be?
One of the key issues as well with analytics and Google Analytics is the fact that if with Google Analytics, you do not have an account manager, you don't have someone you can phone to ask a question and say, does this work? There's lots of support around it. There's loads of forums, there's FAQs, all that sort of thing. But the bottom line is, if something goes wrong, if your stats aren't recording and you rely on it for a business critical decision to be made, it's actually quite hard to do something with that. So unless you've got somebody internally that's very good at digging into Google Analytics, knows how to interpret it, knows how to kind of work things out, it can be a problem sometimes. It's obviously a budget decision, because at the end of the day, to pay from these other systems, you're going to be looking at money every month to pay for something else, ranging from a few pounds a month up to thousands of pounds per month. But there are kind of different options, and sometimes the more important this gets, the deeper you need to go, you may need to move away from Google Analytics.
So Daniel, what do the paid versions have that Google Analytics doesn't have?
There's all sorts of different things. I mean, each package will have its own pros and cons in terms of different ways of reporting. You can split out, for example, if you had a server that was on several different machines and it was load balanced and that kind of thing, that can cause some problems with Google Analytics sometimes, because the cookie setting won't set properly. There's lots of different things. I think Kelvin can probably tell you about the different packages.
Yeah. I mean, I think the main one that is the biggest criticism of Google Analytics is the fact that the last click wins. So when you're setting up goals and conversions, well, you've only got limited number of goals and conversions you can set up anyway. So you might have more than four positive actions that you want people to work on the site. There's ways of working around it, but a pay tool, you wouldn't have to work around it, as it were. But it's that last click, really. So it's kind of understanding a lot of the packages. You can go, okay, well, this person who bought, say you sell cars on your website, and this person bought a car, but you can see the five or six different ways in which they came to your site beforehand, because most purchase decisions isn't made on a one visit to a site. I mean, anyone listening will know that you don't just go to a site once and buy then and there. You'll visit a couple of times. It's understanding which medium bought the people on those various different ones, because it might well be based on Google Analytics, you go, oh, our banner advertising is doing terribly. You know, we get loads of clicks, but no one ever converts. But then you then say, whereas our pay-per-click search traffic, that always converts. But actually, it could be, without, if you took the banners out of the equation completely, no one would be coming to your site via pay-per-click, because they wouldn't have visited before and then recognise your URL, click, and then buy.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because what we always say when we're discussing banner advertising is that it's brand building. It's much like offline advertising, in that people are more aware of your brand, so they are actually more likely to click on your adverts elsewhere and come to your website. So seeing how the different media interact, which is kind of the holy grail of marketing, Google Analytics isn't allowing you to track that completely, because you can't see the history of someone who's actually come to make that click. Now, it is fairly complicated, because you need to set cookies and track things backwards and forwards. But essentially, if you really want to dig into things deeply, then you do need to go down this route.
But it's worth remembering as well, it's another thing, that for a lot of people, they're having to report higher up the chain the value of their search marketing or internet marketing or whatever marketing that they're doing online. And these tools, while great, can give you too much data. So it's, you know, I think that's one reason I'm always going to be a big fan of Google Analytics. You can get the simple data quickly and easily. What you don't want to do is, you know, be trying to convince your boss of the value of a new website, proving why your website's done badly, because, you know, you've got too much data there. That's the problem sometimes. So yeah, that's another thing to bear in mind when making these decisions. But I think people need to think more about which analytics solution they're using and why. They might well stay with Google Analytics, but at least think about other options that are out there, really. So another trend that came out of a few of the panels I was looking at was social media marketing and how that fits into search. And it seems to have calmed down a little bit compared to recent years. And I think it's that there's this, is it Garrett or Gartnett, hype cycle, which is, I think, really quite an interesting way of looking at these things, where it's an upward line graph and you reach this kind of critical point of hype about it, and then it drops down below that and settles to a reasonable level. And I think that's where sort of social media marketing is now. Everyone's got over the craziness of it and is starting to find a way of doing it in a bit more practical way, really.
Yeah, I think what's happened is that a lot of the talk initially was how you could possibly use social media as part of your search strategy. And what's happened now is a lot of the agencies and freelancers have built in social media to their processes or to how they approach things. So it's just part of the normal process now. So when you're building links to a website, what you'd probably do as part of that is look at the blogs that are relevant and target those blogs and try and get into those discussions or give them content that would help gain a link from those blogs. So there's lots of different ways of doing it, but essentially I think people are using it practically now, which is great because it means the hype's gone and people are finding realistic ways of using it.
Yeah, and the final point, which is, you know, not so much a technical one, but was quite interesting, was particularly on the first day, which was the day I attended most of the sessions on, was Brits really not being represented on the panel, which I thought was quite interesting for a UK search marketing conference. And I don't know if this was a kind of active decision by the you know, the people creating the conference and programming it, because it seemed to be there was, you know, quite a lot of continental Europeans and, you know, Americans over. And some of those Americans are, you know, really well established, great speakers. You know, they do the conference tour, so they're really good at it. So from that point of view, you get a really high standard of presentation. But it was interesting that there wasn't many Brits talking on the panel, which I don't know if that's a, you know, why that was, but it was definitely something that I noticed as a pattern, really, which was a bit sad, really, I think, for the UK's biggest search marketing conference.
Yeah, we've seen it quite a lot in the past be the same case. And I think a lot of the reasoning behind it is that the marketing teams in the US tend to be a lot more geared up towards online marketing, which is partly the reason, I think, because of the fact that it's much more accepted over there that online marketing is essential. Absolutely, the UK now, we've got to the point of people realising online marketing is essential, but it has taken a long transitional period to actually get there. And really, it's been interesting how the kind of credit crunch or the recession or whatever you want to call it has essentially forced people to start making decisions they should have been making a long time ago. And we're actually seeing a lot more people moving into digital marketing, shifting budgets around, purely maybe because of the fact that they, you know, because considering it for a long time, but the hand hasn't been forced until now. So I think it may be a nature of the UK business. It may just be the fact that you tend to have lots of advocates in the US that tend to be very good at public speaking, so you end up with a lot of that stuff as well. So I think there's a mixture of factors involved.
Can we just have a quick conversation about Twitter? Because I know we mentioned it briefly at the beginning, but I have been experimentally just trying out Twitter for I think about the last 4 weeks now, because I'm convinced it's useful for something. I just wondered what your experiences were.
I mean, internally, I'm one of the biggest advocates for Twitter. So I think every day I have a conversation with someone that we work with, either internally or externally, about the value of Twitter. And there's a presentation I sent round internally, which I can get Daniel to include in the show notes, which is a slide share presentation. And I think the value of it is if you have a good network, and it's kind of this ability to talk to a lot of people very quickly. So I'm in Beijing. I've never been to Beijing before, but I know a few of my contacts have been to Beijing before. I can say, okay, well, where's, I've arrived, my hotel's rubbish, I need to find a new hotel. Rather than searching for that, I can say, okay, well, which hotels are good? And then based on the value of these people that I've got in my network, I can make judgment calls on that. And it's very good from a technical day-to-day point of view. So for example, you know, one of the guys who emailed in had that problem with Google Analytics. And there's always things with these programs that pop up that you're not aware of. And if you've got a good, you know, network of people that you're contacted in there, it's kind of like a public instant messaging. But the relationship's different. You know, if you want to add someone to your, you know, your MSN account or your AOL instant messenger, you have to be friends with them. But whereas with Twitter, it's a lot more public and open, so you can kind of, you know, you don't have to have that same relationship that you do like on Facebook and these other social networks. So that's where the strength lies, is that you and you're helping other people as well, so fellow people, you know, help you out. You know, that's the real value for it from my point of view.
Dan, what's your experience so far?
I think that there was lots of twittering for the sake of twittering or tweeting for the sake of it at the beginning. People not really sure, but I think as Kelvin says, once you build that network and you know who's in your group, you can ask questions, you can offer advice that people are interested in. The thing we found from the podcast is that the podcast comes out on a fairly regular monthly basis, but there's not much conversation in between, obviously, by the nature of the medium. So it's a really nice way to ask for feedback, ask people questions, see what they want into the podcast. We get a lot through email, obviously, but this is quite good to get a quick response. And people feel more comfortable to say small points in a tweet than they would writing an email that had very little to say. So I think it can help from both perspectives.
And the fact is, if you've got a brand, people are probably already talking about you on there anyway. So you should be aware of where those conversations are taking place and, you know, thinking about how to respond. But look, taking it down a level. So, for example, you know, you're a hotel owner in Ilfracombe in, you know, Devon. And so, you know, how would you use Twitter? Well, you look and monitor for where people are talking about attending Ilfracombe that weekend. And you can, you know, drop them a quick comment saying, oh, you know, glad to see you're coming down our way. Have you, you know, thought about attending our hotel? All those kind of things. It's that kind of connection with people that you otherwise wouldn't be able to get, that, you know, is where the value really comes.
Or even value some sort of nuggets of information, useful information. Of course, it just says from the blah blah hotel Infogroom.
Yeah, the thing I would say as well not to do is, like, if you've got a blog, just use Twitter to, you know, whenever you put a new blog up, it automatically feeds. There's all these tools you can do that use Twitter to update your Facebook feed and then pulls from your RSS. And I've seen a few people get in a kind of infinite loop where it kind of updates every 2 seconds because they updated the wrong one and it, you know, set off a perpetual motion device. But I would say use it like instant messenger. That's that. If you can use it like an instant messenger, you're going to get a lot more value. But bear in mind that that's a public instant messenger, so you have to be careful about what you say, and you don't want to get into arguments. I mean, I think it was Lily Allen and Perez Hilton got in a bit of a to-do over Twitter, you know, arguing. And it's kind of, it becomes public, and, you know, you've got to be aware that people can read it.
So they got into a bit of a kerfuffle on Twitter, did they?
Yeah, a Twitter fight. I don't know. I'm sure there's I can't think. A twite?
Twite is the obvious one. Yeah,
a Twitter fuffle.
I think the key thing is it comes back to the other social media rules, which is make sure you're providing some value. So if you are going to kind of promote yourself or your service for this, make sure you're adding some value. So don't just say, look at us, we're great, but look at us, we're great, here's a discount for you. Or, you know, at least add something to the whole conversation. And just, you know, try and build your network up, but just don't follow everybody and get everybody to follow you, because you end up with a bit of a nonsensical network.
I think it's the old adage that we keep coming back to, isn't it, is aim to help others as much as possible, even with Twitter as well.
Yeah, I think it's always that thing. If you try and provide value, that's your first kind of basis. You'll end up with a decent audience and people will keep listening.
And download a client of some variety. So like Twitter, using the website, it doesn't work in the best way. What you want to do is download TweetDeck and Twirl as two of the most popular ones. And what that then does is whenever someone Twitters, it pops up in the corner of your screen, a bit like if you've got Outlook and every time an email pops up. And that means that you can manage who's replied to you, who sent you a direct message. Whereas if you're doing that on the website, it doesn't update live, so you have to refresh. And it works okay, but, you know, those clients are great. And there's Twitterific for the iPhone, the one that I use, so...
And Twitterific for the Mac as well. So I do the same thing that from both the Mac and the iPhone. It's the same program. So.
I've been using TweetDeck. And the nice thing, if you don't mind being distracted, because you have to be careful, it can be a bit of a distraction. But with TweetDeck, you can set up, I think, as many panes as you want to search for a specific item. So you can literally watch the Twitter sphere. Have I coined that phrase? Someone must have come up with that before. You can watch the Twitter sphere for terms which are relevant to your market. And just get a feel for what's going on and maybe even interject carefully.
Yeah, so if you're interested in all this, if you follow me on Twitter, Daniel Rolls, all one word, and then we'll update you what's going on with the podcast, and we'll update you anything else we think about Twitter as well.
Well, gentlemen, so Daniel Rowles and Kelvin Newman, guys, thank you very, very much indeed, and we'll see you again next time on Internet Marketing.
Thank you, Andy.
Thanks. Cheers.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Now, we would really like to hear from you. So if you have any questions or comments, send them to info@ai-digital.com, and feel free to send in MP3 files as well, and we'll play them. If you're a subscriber, we'd like to thank you for your valuable time. If you haven't subscribed yet and you'd like this show delivered to your earbuds automatically, you can find Internet Marketing on iTunes. Just search under the business and marketing and management categories. Or you can find us at Feedburner at feeds.feedburner.com/academyim. We'd also encourage you to leave comments on iTunes. Well, this is Andy White signing off, wishing you the best until we see you next time on Internet Marketing.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.